Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Finally, we made it. We're here.
Yeah, we made it work today.
Wow, what a day. This morning I thought I was on my deathbed.
Oh no.
And I've lived many lifetimes since then. So, I drug my butt to the doctor, which I never do because when you're feeling so bad that you need to go to the doctor, the last thing you want to do is drag your butt to the doctor.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Mm-hmm.
But I've been sick for so long, and I'm like, I don't have time for this. Like, I don't have time to be down and out.
Well, did he give you good news
he help? Did. You know, and that's the other thing. I've drugged my butt to the doctor in the past, feeling just like crawling in the door, basically. And they're like, well, you have the flu and, you know, there's nothing we can do for you. You just have to
just drink lots of water,
drink lots of fluids and get rest. And, and I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Can you at least give me a bullet, you know? I was negative for the flu, COVID,
well,
and
good
strep,
for you.
But I do have bronchitis.
Oh, I got bronchitis.
Bronchitis! which is,
I ain't got time for that.
Which is not great, but it's good because they gave me a steroid shot in my bum, which gave me wings to fly. He gave me another oral steroid, an inhaler, and a cough medicine. And I have to tell you, I'm lit. I'm flying high right now. This morning I was dying. Now I'm alive. I've been resurrected. It's last week's episode all over again. Literally.
Well, I am so happy for you.
Except I am not the ghost of me. I am just still the me of me. And you went to the dentist. Ew.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's my dreaded story. I just went for a cleaning, okay? Just a preventative.
No.
And they're like, oh, you have a small cavity here. What? Like, I have no pain. But, yeah. So they're like, we're going to do a filling and we can't do your cleaning today.
Oh,
we're going to have to reschedule for that.
They couldn't have cleaned
all excited,
you and then
get
did a filling?
Thank you. That's what I wanted.
I don't understand that silliness.
I just wanted clean teeth. Come on.
I know who doesn't. Wow. Well.
Yeah. So I was numb earlier, and I'm thinking, how am I supposed to talk tonight? But it's worn off, so we're good.
Oh, good. Well, when you said you were at the dentist, I was like, oh, Lord, we're both going through it. We are both going through it today. Oh, and I took Hazel to the doctor as well, because after my diagnosis, you know, the girls have been sick, and that's why I'm always sick. Mm-hmm. And Hazel has had this cough on and off for weeks. And I'm like, you know what? What if she has bronchitis?
Yeah.
She's always complaining about being tired. And so I just went ahead and took her in. Well, she has an ear infection. So antibiotics for her. Yeah. And, you know, so we're all on the mend over here. We're all flying
high. You need to get on some daily vitamins.
You know what? I bought some tonight. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's so adult of you. I'm so proud of you.
And it came in a pretty bottle. And I was like, you know what? Aww. Lena would be so proud. And I'm happy because it's in a pretty bottle. And it looks to have all the vitamins that I need. It's a women's multivitamin. So I am going to, you know, I've been on prenatals for the past 10 whatever years. So that's been my vitamin of choice. But now I'm moving on to the next stage, you know. So I think I might need it something different, you know. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, so for tonight's episode, I was actually working on a different case last week for this week's episode. But because I have my finger on the pulse of all things true crime, I was reminded of something when I was doom scrolling one night, that something huge just happened in an almost 50-year-old cold case. Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I saw it like when it was breaking early in March. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was doing something and like I couldn't click the link to the bio, to the link. You have to click all these links to get there. But, and by the way, if I sniff, I am just so sorry. I hope you're not eating lunch. Yeah.
That's so gross,
I'm
Candace.
So sorry. I've got post-nasal. but, and you know what? If you're a true crime junkie like Lena and I, you may have actually heard about this case because this was major. Just this month, well, I guess it's April now, in March, this cold case was solved after 46 years. It was solved.
Okay, well, let's tell me.
Yeah, and because there was recent news on it just earlier this in March, it was hard for me to find the archival information because my, you know, my browser, the SEO, I guess, was clogged with all the new articles, right? So I was digging and digging and digging. But I'll tell you everything that I know about the heinous murder of Carol Sue Klaber. So Carol was born November 28th, 1959 in Covington, Kentucky, to her parents Daniel and Betty Jane Klaber. She had two brothers. She was the only girl. The brothers were Charles and Thomas. And sadly, her father passed away in 1970 at just 41 years old. So she was just but, you know, 10 or 11 when that happened. Carol was your girl's girl. She reminded me, like, of our Grammy.
Aww,
she loved sewing and cooking and, like, helping her mom cook dinner and mend things. And it's like she lived a purposeful life. Like, every aspect of her life, every talent that she had, she used. She was very into music. She actually began playing the piano at 5 years old, and then she picked up the acoustic guitar, and then she started learning to play the violin.
Wow.
She'd play music and sing in the bathtub. You know, she just was so cool. I can just imagine, like, being best friends with her if I lived near her during that time.
Yeah, sounds like your kind of girl.
Exactly, right? Her family and friends described her as having a great sense of humor. She was silly and fun, but she also had this really very mature, serious side to her. She had a deep compassion for the less fortunate. She volunteered as a candy striper at St. Charles Nursing Home. Isn't that precious?
That's cute.
Yeah, she just sounds so wholesome, so of the time, just a great girl. Yeah. And she loved riding her bike to meet up with her friends in the park, you know, back in that day. And back in our day, Lena, we would ride bikes and meet up with each other. Yeah. We'd pretty much only pick up the phone to say, hey, you want to meet at the bridge? Yeah. So she was like that. She loved hanging out and hanging outdoors with her friends. And by 1979, she lived at 414 Werner Drive in Fort Wright, Kentucky, with her mother. Now, it's worth noting here that some reports mentioned her leaving her parents' home. There's other mention of her parents, quote unquote, at the time of her death, but her father had passed already, so I don't know if her mother remarried.
Oh, okay.
And if she had a stepfather in that home with her, her mother, and her brothers. I think that her mother did remarry because I was looking at her mother's obituary and she had a different last name than Klaber.
Oh, okay.
At the time of her death. So just to note, if you do your own research on this case and it talks about her parents, maybe that's what it is, but I couldn't really find any information about a stepfather in the picture. So she was 16 years old and she was a junior at Dixie Heights High School. She was very social, friendly, and by the way, I'll post a picture of her on our Instagram. She did not look 16.
Oh.
She was one of those very mature young ladies. Okay. Mature young looking young ladies. She looked like she was in her 20s.
Okay.
But she was very modest, her friends say. She may have looked older, but she certainly did not exploit that. You know, so while other 16-year-old girls may have been seeing what they could get away with wearing, you know, she was not doing that. Not at all. And I wonder if her mature appearance had anything to do with her being targeted. Oh, and had okay. anything to do with what happened next. So on June 4th, 1976, Carol was headed to a friend's for dinner. I saw one report that said she was going to their house. One report said they were going to meet at a restaurant.
Oh.
Wherever she was going, she wasn't going very far from her parents' home because she went on her bike. But witnesses say that they saw her getting off her bike and into a white car.
Oh.
And again, here's another discrepancy because they said it could have either been a Chevrolet Monte Carlo or a Pontiac Grand Prix. I know nothing about cars. My brother, if he's listening, he's probably like, oh yeah, I could see where those might be, you know. But I did look at 70s models of these two vehicles
uh-huh.
and compared them. And I could totally see where people might get the two cars confused. They're very boxy, to me, all cars look the same.
Yeah.
But that's just one little detail. But they all agreed on the white.
Oh, okay.
You know, they all said it was white. And that there was one person, slender build, with sandy blonde hair, driving the car. Couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman.
Huh.
They didn't mention that part. But they did say there was only one person. Now, someone said that they saw her load her bike in the back of the car, like the trunk.
Okay.
And then a neighbor close to her home said that they saw her get out of a white car, get a bike out of a trunk, leave it out in front of her home, and then get back in the car.
Huh.
And that's the last place anyone could say they saw her. So it very much seemed like she knew the person because why would you do all of that if it was a stranger?
Right.
You know, you wouldn't say, oh, sir, by the way, if you're going to take me to my friend's house or the restaurant, do you mind if we drop my bike off? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just seems like someone would have seen her and say, oh, hey, get in. And she's like, oh, well, I'm on my bike. And he's like, oh, no, we'll drop it at your house. That, to me, is more like plausible, right?
Right.
Plus, she wasn't the type of girl to just go off with a stranger.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have just gotten in a car with a stranger. She just wouldn't have done that. So we're getting to the part where I have to say she wouldn't be missing for long. And sense the tone there.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never want to finally find your child after them being missing the whole night, dead.
Oh, my goodness.
It was the next morning, a Saturday, around 7:45 or 8 a.m., when a dentist who was on his way to work to ruin lives, he saw the body, and he was like, oh, there's somebody laying in the ditch. And he pulls over, and this was right off Chambers Road in Walton, Kentucky. And he got out, and of course, when he got closer, he realized the body was a young woman, and she was not alive.
Oh, man.
And it was Carol. It was later determined that she had been strangled with the heavy chain necklace that she wore.
Oh, my gosh.
And, trigger warning, sexually assaulted. Mm. But that wasn't her cause of death. Her cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head.
Mm.
She had been severely beaten. Now, when her family heard that she was found, her brother Thomas volunteered to identify his sister's body. And I'm guessing to spare her family, her mother, from seeing her child like that. Like, what a guy. Right. Can you imagine?
I know.
I don't actually know how old he was at the time of her death. I couldn't find that information, but wow. That's to say, you know what, Mom? I'm not going to let you go through this and have that
take on that responsibility.
Image. Exactly. So he did go, and it was, he confirmed that it was his sister. Now, Carol's service was held on Tuesday, June 8th, at the Linneman Funeral Home, and she was laid to rest in Fort Lawn Memorial Park near Erlanger, Kentucky. I always wonder, people hear these stories and they're like, oh, they were buried, and then we talk about the case, and then we talk about the suspects, and we tell the story, but imagine your family member's murdered. You plan this funeral. You attend the funeral. You're sitting there talking about the life and the, you know, all the great things about your 16-year-old daughter that someone murdered.
Yeah.
And
I could not imagine.
There has to be a part of you that cannot sit in that seat. You know, it's like, I want to be outside figuring out who did this.
Yeah.
It's like you can't even, you know, I think of the last funeral I went to, Granddad's funeral.
Uh-huh.
And you sit there and you think about all the times, you know, the little straws he'd pull out of the broom and say, hey, if you tickle my ear, I'll give you 10 cents. And, you know, hey, if you file these papers for me, I'll give you $20.
Yeah.
And I just remember all the things he was to us. And, you know, we also had it in the back of our mind knowing that he went in peace.
Right.
And he was no longer, you know, suffering from the illness that took him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But families of murdered victims, especially children, and they're sitting there like, I'm just looking back at my notes. She was laid to rest. It's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
For a murdered victim. And then they could have never known that this case would just go ice cold.
Yeah.
Completely cold. Cold, cold, cold.
Tragic.
So, anyways, I digress. Let's get to the investigation, because there was one. Jerry Keith was a detective with the Kentucky State Police. He became the investigator on the case. And he was relentless. I mean, you can't say that they didn't collect evidence. You know, mm-hmm. this is not a story of the police boggled this investigation.
Uh-huh.
They didn't. They collected evidence. They collected DNA swabs when there wasn't even DNA in the 70s.
Yeah.
They didn't even know. I mean, they had to have known, oh, maybe we can use this somehow, some way. And they did their due diligence, and they really did. Now, from talking to friends and family and witnesses in the vicinity, they did establish somewhat of that timeline. Of course, they had that little bit of information about the driver and the vehicle she was last seen in, but we're talking about a cold case here. So you know, the weeks drug on, the months drug on, before any suspects actually emerged in the case.
Wow.
One suspect emerged, like, years and years and years and years and years later. So due to the fact that we have the advantage of hindsight, I won't identify these two suspects by name because we know they didn't murder Carol. They may not have been saints, but they have nothing to do with this case.
Gotcha.
But I will tell you how they got tangled up in all this and how they were ever linked to it. The first guy was caught stealing a vehicle that matched the description of the car, the white car Carol was seen getting into.
Oh, wow.
So they thought, well, that's sus, you know?
See, that's why you don't do things like that. Like, you exactly. never know how it's going to escalate.
I know, right? Well, he cooperated fully with police. He said, you know, I've messed up. I've done some stupid stuff, but I would never kill anyone, and I didn't murder Carol. He gave a DNA sample to police. They swabbed him, and he said, please, like, let me know. Because he's like, I know I didn't do it, but I would love for you to personally clear me.
Yeah.
Like, he was all in this. He was like, I'll do whatever I can to help you. And the police were able to officially clear him all these years later. And they did call him. They picked up the phone and called him and said, you didn't do it. And he's like, yeah, I know. But thank you for your call. And, whew, you know, because I can't imagine. Now, the second guy had been accused of raping a woman in 1978 in a nearby town. And he did confess to raping her, but he denied killing Carol as well. So he also gave a DNA sample, which ruled him out. And they had fingerprints on this guy because of the rape case and all of that.
Right.
So they were able to totally clear him. Now, in 2017, and I'm not, 2017, that's a big jump, right?
Yeah. Long time.
So, Jerry Keith, the investigator, he was relentless for like 10 years. 10 years. Investigating this case, running down every single thing, hitting brick wall after brick wall. I can't imagine how frustrating that must have been. So, the case did go cold because what are you going to do? I mean, if you've exhausted everything, no one's talking. The witnesses saw what they saw. People didn't see what they didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Technology isn't there yet. You know, yeah. You just got to wait. So in 2017, a cold case unit with the Boone County Sheriff's Department reopened Carol's case. They cracked open those dusty old boxes and found fingerprints. They found samples. They were really surprised at all the evidence that was in those boxes. And they realized we can test this stuff for DNA.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were quickly able to rule out those two lead suspects because they had obtained their DNA samples, ruled them out. And the original detective, Jerry Keith, that worked on this case, died that same year in 2017.
Oh.
And actually, it was in 2017 that they established this cold case unit in the Boone County Sheriff's Department. And it just seems like that was maybe Detective Keith's legacy, that he had held on to this for so long. Like, other detectives said that he had the entire case file, a whole copy of it, at his home.
Yeah.
And he would still, till the day he died,
wow,
crack it open. And, you know, you always hear on Dateline when they're like, there was that one piece of evidence,
yeah,
hiding in plain sight in the case file, and it was there the whole time. And so I think he probably thought, it's here. It's in this box. It's here.
Well, and that's the thing.
Just, like, have to find it.
A lot of investigators, like, they have that one case or maybe even a few cases that they just, you know,
can't let go of.
Yeah, they can't let go of. And now that this, I mean, I don't know how Investigator Keith died, but it's almost like, okay, this cold case group is going to reopen it, and now I can rest easy knowing that they're going to do their job and get it solved.
Exactly. He can rest easy. That's right. And he had done some amazing work on it. I mean, he didn't just have the case file at his house. He had like a pegboard up, and you know, you can imagine the little strings and the pictures. Wow. And so it's just amazing. And it was that year that Detective Coy Cox took over the case. Now, I'm not sure what happened between 2017 and late 2022, but you know how stuff like that moves at a snail's pace. You send a letter, then you get funding, then you get this passed, and then you get this request, and then you ask for this budget increase. And then you send it off,
and then you have to wait for results. Exactly. Yeah.
And then someone says no, and then you have to file an appeal. And I mean, I worked in law for many years, and that moves at a snail's pace. I can imagine there's just as much bureaucracy in like the police, you know, with the labs and all that communication. I can imagine that goes on too. So, but in September of 2022, a Texas-based laboratory got involved. Ortham Inc. specializes in forensic genealogy, specifically to solve cold cases. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Like, a lab is like, you know what? We're going to solve cold cases. And what? Because they were able to rule out the two lead suspects in 2017, they needed more, right? So they had the DNA from the samples in the box. They had the DNA from the two lead suspects back in 2017, and they were able to say, not a match. But to get to the murderer, they had to do something big,
right?
So that's why they got this lab involved. They needed more. They needed that extra step to get them to the truth. How many cold cases are we seeing being solved with this type of strategy?
Yeah.
Good Lord. It's like my brain just
skipped.
That was
hard, Candace.
That was difficult. The Golden State Killer case, that's how we solved it.
Oh, okay.
Through forensic genealogy. And by the way, if you've been... I'm talking to you if you've murdered someone. if you have been living your life, eating Chick-fil-A, remarrying, having more children, sitting in your recliner watching reruns of The Price is Right, doing whatever an old man or woman does that thinks they're just going to die an old man or woman and warm in their bed, let me tell you something. Justice is coming for you.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I don't care how many wrinkles you have. We're going to lock you up. Okay? Anyway, back to the story. Ortham Inc. developed a DNA profile, and through working leads, they tracked down the child of this profile.
Oh.
This person never really knew their father. So they were like, yeah, you can have my DNA.
Oh, wow.
So they got the child's DNA, and they were able to match a parent-child relationship with this DNA.
That is incredible.
That child's father was the murderer. And by the way, side note, the funding for this DNA testing came from Season of Justice.
Oh.
If you're a true crime junkie, and you also listen to the podcast Crime Junkie, you'll probably know the name of this nonprofit organization, Season of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
It was started by Ashley Flowers, who is the Crime Junkie host. That's actually the first podcast that Lena and I really got into and started texting about. And did you hear this case? Did you hear this case? Probably why we're sitting here today.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really cool. So they funded the research, the testing for that. So through this testing, they identified a man named Thomas W. Dunaway as Carol's killer. And he was 19 when he murdered Carol. He lived in Park Hills, which was just a mile and a half away from Carol and her family. So investigators definitely think she may have knew him through, you know, the neighborhood. Right. Friends of her friends, high school friends, you know,
right. How it all kind of bleeds together. It was probably a small town.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and she rode her bike around. If he was driving around, I mean, I certainly think he knew her.
Right.
I don't think that that was random at all. And I don't think that if she didn't know him, she would have gotten his car. I think she definitely either knew him or knew of him.
Gotcha, yeah.
Enough to trust him to get in that car.
I agree.
So, we've got the guy. Where do we go from here? Well, we go nowhere.
Nowhere.
Because Thomas Dunaway died of a heart attack in 1990 at the age of 33.
Wow.
So there will be no trial. There will be no jail time. No justice for her family.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, in essence, there is justice. We have an answer. Yeah.
If he's burning in hell, but there's justice.
He didn't live a long life after that. Yeah, I mean, he was 19 at the time and died in his 30s, but that's not a long life.
That's not. And
I mean,
I'm glad he died and didn't live that long life of becoming a grandfather. And, you know, you think about these, like the Golden State Killer. I mean, yeah. He went on and grew old. And
exactly.
Had this relationship with his, I think it was a granddaughter or a niece, but he was just like, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
All this time.
Well, and like the Peacock's murder that we talked about a few weeks ago, that trial I don't think has even started. I actually looked it up earlier to see if there was any new news, but the last they said was that he was arrested as an old man years later.
And he was probably, what was he was into collecting something. What was it? Am I dreaming that? Maybe I'm dreaming that.
I don't know, but I mean.
Coins?
No, they so the peacocks. The peacocks, peacocks were known.
Coins. Okay.
Yeah, they were known to have cash and maybe possibly gems and stuff in the house. Mm. But yeah, nothing was said about Michael Louise collecting anything. But all that to say, even though there's no justice in this Thomas Dunaway, you know, him going to prison or whatever, he still didn't live a long life like these other guys. And I mean, that's justice in itself, I think.
I hope that it feels like justice for her family. And investigators did go to her brother's home, Thomas Claber, which I would be really pissed off if he had my name, and personally informed him of the discovery, like the day they got the news. Oh. And Thomas Claber was understandably incredibly angry.
Yeah.
I mean, he was angry all over again at his loss and angry no justice for his sister. Like, he even said that he had some, quote, very unchristian, end quote, plans for her killer when he was found. Because her death had a huge impact on him, on the trajectory of his life. I mean, can you imagine being a child and your sister's murdered and you carry the burden of identifying her body? I mean, it affected his sense of justice, peace, safety.
Yeah.
Thomas Claber's son, Daniel, who is now 28 years old, said that when he was growing up, his dad was so strict. Like, he would call him multiple times if he hadn't heard from him in a while.
Aww.
But Thomas Claber was thankful for one thing, though. He thought maybe someday they might have to exhume Carol's body. Because, you know, with all this DNA coming out, he feared... Like, he was like, well, maybe that's the only way her case will ever be solved. They might have to disturb her final resting place to get DNA. And the detective said, no, No, we don't need to do that. We just exhumed Thomas Dunaway's body instead.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They exhumed Thomas Dunaway's body to get his DNA profile put into CODIS.
Wow.
That's right. That's right. And you know, they wanted to get that DNA profile into the national database because they believed he probably killed even more people.
Yeah.
And perhaps they could solve even more cold cases. So they exhumed him instead of Carol. And that is a little bit of justice.
True.
Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
But even with this, he'd have to make peace with Carol's death pretty much all over again, if you think about it. And this time in a new way, because now he has the answer to who. And he'd need that to make sense. You know, he told one of the investigators that he always, in the back of his mind, thought it was Thomas Dunaway for some reason. Like, I don't know if he ever expressed that verbally to anyone.
Right.
Or if he just kind of was like, had that nagging feeling in the back of his mind.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting when I heard that he had that inkling.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't elaborate on it, but
yeah,
he was
like what sparked that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll post the sketch and a photo of Thomas Dunaway when he was 19. And see what you think.
Okay.
Maybe it's because the composite sketch looked like him, or maybe Thomas Dunaway. I'll get to what he did, what other things that he did, but he had a reputation. So.
And did he drive a white vehicle?
He did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we may only really have the answer to the question who. Because case closed now, right? And of course, in every investigation, you want to get an answer to everything else, right? The mm-hmm. why, the how, the when, and so on. But with the answer to who, we may get more information that we wish to have known. Because like I just alluded to, Thomas Dunaway had a criminal history, guys.
Right.
Guys.
Not shocking.
In December of 1969, this was months... just months after Carol was murdered, after he murdered Carol, he killed a man named Ron Townsend.
What?
Yeah, he shot Ron Townsend. I think Ron Townsend lived for a couple of days and then he died. But he killed somebody else. He was arrested for the crime and he was actually sentenced to life in prison for the crime. But
really?
He only served a little over 7 years in prison. I don't know why. The investigators do not know why.
In the world.
Yeah. When they found out, he was sentenced to life in prison, but he only served 7 years?
How does that happen?
I don't know. I don't know. And if they know, then they haven't made it public yet. But before that, before he was arrested... he was arrested in South Carolina for unlawful possession of a sawed-off shotgun and torching a car.
Bro.
Yeah. Well, days after Carol's body was found, he enlisted in the Army.
He's like, I'm out of here.
Coincidence? I do not think so.
Mm-mm.
You might be wondering, well, hang on a second. He killed the guy. When did that... if that happened in December, how did he enlist in the Army right after he killed Carol? Well, because he killed Carol. Her body was found. He enlisted in the Army. Went to the Army for 6 months. Went AWOL because he's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And that's just what they do. And then he came back home and killed that guy. So... real classy. Thanks for your service. Not.
Mm-mm.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, goodness.
So, that's what we know about Thomas Dunaway and what he did a little bit before, you know, during, after. And that's really all we have at the moment regarding her case. It's not, I mean, it's closed now. They've got the answer.
Yeah.
And this is just wild.
Yeah. I mean, we may not have the story of, you know, her last moments or why he did it or where he, why she got into his car. But yeah, I, like you said earlier, I hope this is some kind of justice to at least have this answer and know that he's not on this earth anymore torturing people.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. Like, we will never know her final moments, like, because, you know, we don't know if he would have ever explained. And even if he did explain, would we believe him? But sometimes it's nice to not have a visual of beautiful Carol getting into that car, saying, yeah, it's just up here, just up here on the right, you know?
Yeah.
And him telling us what her state of mind was, that she was completely unaware. She was so trusting. And what he did and how scared she must have been. Sometimes that moment is the victim's. And sometimes it's best if the family never has to relive that with the victim. And for the victim, because I cannot imagine, I just can't imagine knowing the final moments and how terrifying, strangled with her own, like, necklace that she chose to wear that day. She would put it on because it was one of her favorite. It was like this chunky chain. You have to just, like, visualize this girl. She's into art and music, and that's such a 90s, early 2000s. Like, statement piece, but she's like, oh, a chain, that's sweet, you know? What a trendsetter. And then she gets strangled with it? Yeah. My Lord.
Yeah.
So, that is the story. Carol, I hope you're at peace. We got him. After all this time, they never gave up on you. And they got him. They got him. And he may be dead, but we got him. And we know his name. We're shouting it out. And we're speaking ill of the dead. We are. I'm going to smear his name on the concrete like poo off my shoe. Mm-hmm. Thomas Dunaway, how dare you?
Yeah.
That was a poem. And a very short poem, but I just wrote it. Rest in peace, Carol. I'm so thankful that your family has an answer. They can do what they will. They can move forward in whatever way they can now and just know, have at least one piece to the puzzle. Maybe they'll never know anything else, but they'll know the name. They'll know who.
Right.
And, you know, maybe because this child, we don't know their name. They didn't have a relationship with their dad. No surprise there. But maybe this gives an opportunity for that family to make amends in some way. I mean, I've heard of things like that happening with victims and, you know, perpetrators' families coming together in some sort of a beautiful, weird, strange, that feels weird and uncomfortable, but it's, you know, healing.
And it's a connection.
It's a connection. Yeah. So maybe something like that might come of this. Like, you just never know what could come, what amazing things could still come of this. So I had to put that other case down and tell you guys about this story because after 50 years, they were like, we are not letting this go. Not letting this go. And I think we're going to see more and more and more of these cases getting funding and grants and, you know, DNA coming through. And it's so exciting. It is so exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, how many more cold cases are there that can be solved?
So many. And just think of, like, all the cross-referencing they're doing probably with, you know, his time in the military. Where was he? What towns was he in? What missing people?
Right.
What,
well, and how great murders. That his DNA is in CODIS now and isn't can be linked.
They snatched him up out of that dirt and they were like, that's do incredible. You consent, sir, to this DNA? Well, that's too bad, crusty old man. We're getting it in CODIS.
Wow.
Thank you for your contribution. I wonder which part of their his body they took it from. I'll have fun thinking about that later.
Yeah,
maybe they pulled his fingernails off, like...
Oh.
Like snapped them off, you know? Okay, well, this was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast. Testing,
hey,
testing. Up your ziggy with a Wawa brush. Have you seen that movie?
No. Well,
it was like in the 90s.
What's it from?
It was, I think it was called Strike, but Chelsea sent me the like a little reel
snippet
or whatever it was.
Oh.
And reminded me of that movie. And I was like, oh my gosh. Up your ziggy with a Wawa brush. Anyways, okay, here we go.